One person said, you're Mr. Drug Cop himself, the absolute best of the best, the fiercest leader, and the true definition of Baltimore's finest. He's continuously trained young officers due to having an abundant amount of knowledge in the craft that he has perfected. You always feel safe and comfortable with Madge. Even in a fucked up situation, he will make you laugh and he will ease your mind. We're dropping the first two episodes of The Real Ones, and today we feature a city that is right in the center of my heart, city of Baltimore. This episode features one of Baltimore's finest, Tony Maggio. Tony was raised in Baltimore's East Side, and he grew up to police those same streets. He's revered by everyone on the force, and he's also earned the respect of the community that he polices. And that's because not only does he take his job seriously, but he polices with respect and he polices with compassion. I don't want to embarrass you, but I just thought we got a couple quotes of some things that police have said about you.
Okay.
On the department. I'm not going to tell you who they're from, but I'm just going to read a couple of them. One of them said that you're honest, you're kind, you're upfront, you're trustworthy, and you're the king of the East Side. One person said that you have a calming effect. Actually, a lot of people said that you have a calming effect. You always feel safe and comfortable with Madge. Even in a fucked up situation, he will make you laugh and he will ease your mind. One person said you're Mr. Drug Cop himself, the absolute best of the best, the fiercest leader, and the true definition of Baltimore's finest. He's continuously trained young officers due to having an abundant amount of knowledge in the craft that he has perfected. So that's what they're saying about you. So I guess, like, just to start off, man, tell me, like, where you're from, what part of the city you're from, and what the city of Baltimore means to you.
So I grew up in Baltimore. Was born on the East Side. I lived at Luzerne and Monument. One thing from Baltimore you'll find out when you ask somebody where they're from, it's either going to be an intersection or 100 block, you know, or East Side, West Side, something like that. We don't really give, that's kind of like how we relate to where we're from.
Okay.
And kind of stayed on the East Side my whole life for the most part. Moved away a couple times, you know, with family, like to Florida or California, but always ended up back in Baltimore. And then didn't move out of the city until kind of when I was like 15, we moved out into the suburbs just because it was getting really bad and I started getting a little bit of trouble. But yeah, I mean, I grew up in a rough part of the city, you know, and I watched it change over the years, you know, as a kid. And, you know, I have older brothers and, you know, I saw a lot of things, you know, happen in the neighborhood and with my own family that, you know, just didn't think I wanted to be a part of,
mm-hmm.
you know, and never really knew what I wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
I just knew that what I didn't want to do, you know, and seeing some friends, you know, get involved in things that probably they shouldn't be getting involved in. You know, growing up in Baltimore, it's a great city. You know, I love the city, always have. When I decided I wanted to be a cop, it's the only place I wanted to come to be a cop was Baltimore. Growing up there and just kind of seeing how the city was failing, you know, as a whole.
You know, when did you start seeing it? You saw that at a young age?
At a young age. I mean, I had friends.
And what did you see?
You know, drugs taking over the neighborhoods and, you know, the crack epidemic was terrible and the violence, you know, just, and when you have friends that start getting involved in that. Now, I had friends in all different areas of that city because I had moved around a lot. You know, went to a bunch of different schools throughout the city, like went to one school and, you know, was expelled and then they sent me to another school.
What'd you get expelled for?
Fighting, you know, young kid, you know, you think you're tough or whatever. And, you know, you get expelled, they send you to another school, so you meet another group of friends. And so I had friends that were like really kind of soft kids that would never get in trouble. And then my neighborhood friends, you know, were rougher kids, you know, we lived in like a rougher part of the
city. What was that, like that part of East Baltimore growing up, what was that like?
So young, it wasn't a bad area. You know, when I was a little kid, you know, 5, 6, 7, it really wasn't crazy violent, at least in the neighborhood. Baltimore, like back then, was different. There was more organization to it. There was more organization to the crime game years ago, you know, where even like on Sundays, it was kind of like the off day for criminals. You know, like they didn't really mess around. They didn't mess with the kids back then. Like they didn't approach us when we were young, 10, 11, 12 year olds trying to get us involved in anything. You know, that's totally different these days where they encourage the juvenile to be involved
because
of lesser charges.
Yeah.
But I mean, growing up in Baltimore, there was crime, you know, like had guns pulled on me, been shot at when I was younger. But you don't really, when you're growing up in that type of environment, you don't realize it to be a bad environment.
Sure.
It's just your neighborhood.
Sure.
You know, it's just things happen.
Sure.
Is this kind of how you view it? You know what I mean? And I've always, you know, got in fights, things like that, a little bit of mischief, never nothing where, you know, I never got involved in drugs or dealing with guns or anything like that because it just wasn't my scene.
Mm-hmm. Was there a certain moment where you're like, I'm never going down that road?
Yeah, my oldest brother, he had some problems, you know, with drugs back then, drinking, and he was getting in a lot of trouble. And my dad was involved in a lot of, like, you know, he was involved in drugs and things like that. And I hung out with my father one time. He used to have his green van. His nickname was Turtle. And he had this green van and he would drive it around. And like one time he picked me up and we went collecting money. I'm like 7 or 8 years old, but I'll never forget it. Cause I'm like, man, I get to hang out with my dad. Like, you know, you're a kid and he's not in your life. And the minute you get to hang out with him, you don't give a shit what you're going to do.
Straight up.
Yeah. You know? And he's like, come on, we're going to go do something. I'm like, all right, cool. So we're riding around and we're collecting money. I don't know what for. And I'm young and dumb. I really don't know what's going on.
Hey, you're with your dad, man. Who gives a fuck?
You know, right. And so we're going from spot to spot and he's picking money up. And in his van, he had like a, you know, it's like those old school vans with like a little window in the corner in the back. You know what I mean? And the carpeted floor. And he rolls the carpet up and he picks the floor up and there's just a spot for money. You know, I'll never forget it because it was like, for me, I was like, oh my God, this is like a movie. This is crazy, you know?
Yeah.
He puts the money in there, rolls the carpet back, you know, and I'm like, we just keep doing it, you know what I mean? And I was just like, man, this is, you know, a wild experience. And then my mother was always like, stay away from him. You know, he's like, he's bad news. And I'm like, yeah, he's my dad, like whatever. He had a club right down the street from our house, like a social club, you know, like private, you know, always locked. Well, me and my buddy broke into it one day. Because they had pool tables now, we wanted to shoot pool.
Yeah.
So I was like 8 years old, and we broke into it. And we're shooting pool, and somebody hears somebody playing with the locks. I'm like, oh, shit, we got to hide. So we hid. And the way we got in was the deadbolt wasn't locked. The bottom lock wasn't. We just pried it open with a butter knife and got in.
How old are you?
8. So we're in there shooting pool. We hide. Comes in, and the guy's doing whatever the guy's doing, and we're hiding. And then he leaves. Well, when he left, he locked the deadbolt, but it was a key on both sides. There was no knob.
Got it.
So you couldn't unlock it to get out.
Yeah.
So now I'm stuck in this fucking club with my buddy. And you know, all the windows are like blacked out. And there's like bars on the front window. And there's only a little window like this big on the front window and then bars. So we're not banging on the door for people walking by trying to get someone's attention. And then finally someone saw my ass in the window. And they went and got my mom. And man, they got my dad. He came and let us out. And she was pissed.
Yeah.
You know, and it was just her sitting me down and kind of explaining to me like who he was. You know, and seeing, I mean, she loved him, but she hated him. And seeing the hatred she had for him, like how he made her feel, I just knew I never wanted to be like him at that moment.
Huh.
Like, you know, at that moment, I knew, like, I didn't know exactly what he was doing, but I knew whatever he was doing, my mother hated him so much that I never wanted to make her feel like that.
Wow.
You know, obviously later on, I found out, like, I knew what he did. And, you know, sold drugs and things like that. And anyone I've ever met that knew my father loved him as a person.
Yeah.
Said he was the greatest guy, his friends, they all loved him. I never knew that side of him because he didn't really care about his family. You know what I mean?
Well, the first time you and I met was over in the Eastern Division and we started talking. You told me, you're like, I'm from right over there. And, you know, East Baltimore is East Baltimore, man. And I remember you said, you know, it's different for you because it's like these people, it's like you're from this neighborhood and it was just very clear for me. I remember like the first time that we went and, you know, you guys got that gun off that guy over in those housing projects and everyone was kind of like approaching. You treated every single person with respect. Every single person respected you. Like, do you think that that's where you got this sort of empathy for the community from? Because, I mean, obviously it helps to be from the community, but the fact that you, look, man, it's possible to be a criminal and still be a good human being and have love for them.
Yeah, like I said, my brother was getting in trouble, my oldest brother, and I saw the cops beat him up one time. He deserved it. I mean, I'll be the first to tell you, he was, you know, high and acting crazy. He could fight, and he was giving them the blues, and more showed up, and they gave him the blues, you know, but I knew my brother. I knew he had a good heart and he was a good person when he wasn't getting in trouble and wasn't like fucking with drugs and, you know, drunk and doing those things. He was a great person. And I knew how he could be. So I think I always kind of had that mindset that just because someone's doing something, like I said, there's things you can forgive and there's things you can't. You know, someone, you know, selling drugs or, you know, getting in a fight or things like that. Like, you know, these are all things that you can forgive. Like, there's still people that are just making bad choices. You know, if you, you know, you start getting into, like, you know, when you're molesting kids and raping women and killing people, these are a little more things that there's a finer line. Yeah. You know, but people make bad decisions. You know, and who views those, like, who am I to say that decision's worse than a bad decision I made in my life? You know, so I've never looked at it, like, personally. Like, okay, I'm going to lock this guy up because he has an illegal firearm. Okay, he had an illegal gun. He's not trying to shoot me with it. He might fight over it. Maybe if he would have got it, he would have tried to shoot me, but it never happened. So to me, it's not a personal engagement.
Mm-hmm.
It's a job,
mm-hmm.
you know, a career
mm-hmm.
that I chose. And I think a problem that a lot of cops have is they make it personal.
Yep.
Like, oh, he's running from me. No, he's running from the police.
Right,
like,
right,
it doesn't
right.
matter who's wearing the badge. He's right. running from the badge. You
right.
know what I mean?
Right.
And in every aspect, that's kind of where I've just kept it business.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, you're still a person. You know, even if you get into a scuffle with them, they're fighting and you're trying to resist, you know, detain them, they're trying to fight. Whatever happens in that moment, when it's done, it's done.
Right.
And but a lot of people can't separate the two.
What do you think? Why is that?
Ego.
Mm-hmm.
Never being in that type of situation, never being punched in the mouth as a kid.
Yep.
I mean, you know, you have people that come to this job and they've never been in altercation.
Mm-hmm.
And some people may say, well, that's good. Well, I don't think it is. You know, you come into an environment like an inner city in any state, and, you know, you think you're an alpha male or you think you're a lion, you know, you're coming into an environment with T-Rexes. You know what I mean? People that aren't scared of you, you know, people that don't fear you, that aren't scared of going to jail, and you try to act tough. And trust me, like, people, a lot of cops take for granted how smart the criminal element is.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a big issue because they think, okay, I'll just come here and have my authority and I'll tell them what to do and they'll listen.
Exert my dominance
right.
or some
you
shit.
You know,
yeah.
and it's when you get resistance, a lot of people don't know how to handle that because they've never had resistance in their life. You know, and like I said, they've never been in a physical altercation. They've never been in an uncomfortable situation. You know, and I think when people find themselves in that situation, fear takes over.
Absolutely.
And when fear takes over, bad decisions are made.
Absolutely.
You know, and not saying that there's malice behind it. Sometimes there is. But a lot of times it's just fear.
Can you give me an example of a time that you feel like you've seen, you know, someone on either side of the law make a big mistake out of fear?
Oh, yeah. Like, not long ago. Chasing a dude. He had a gun. Actually, maybe it was probably a month or two ago. Maybe three. We're chasing a guy with a gun. I'm chasing him. I'm coming up behind him in the car. I jump out. He tries to throw the gun on the roof. Doesn't realize it's me. The gun doesn't make the roof. Falls back down. He goes to grab the gun and starts, like, to turn, like, with me, like, towards me with the gun, like, getting a shootout probably.
Yeah.
And then looks up and sees me. And, like, oh, shit, Madge, and drops it. You know what I mean? And he was about to make a real bad decision.
Yeah.
Being that I had been in that neighborhood pretty much my whole life working, I knew his dad, you know, and I think even though it was a bad decision, he corrected it immediately.
I'm sorry. So he goes to grab the gun. He turns to you.
Like he's about to pick it up.
Yeah.
Because, you know, he's in his mind, this is it.
Right.
Like I'm shooting out.
That's it.
So when he goes to grab it, the gun is like facing me. So he goes to grab it. And as he's going to grab it, he's going to come up with it. And I'm pulling my gun out now because, you know, I'm thinking, okay, this is going to be it.
Yeah.
And then he says, oh, shit, man, and like drops it.
He's seen you, yeah, knows you, you
right,
know
so
his dad. Gotcha. Yep.
It was a really bad decision, regardless. Now, it was corrected quickly by him. But if it wasn't me, who knows what happens?
Right, right, right.
That's a bad decision that I don't think, you know, I don't think he really wanted to do it.
Yep.
He just was so scared. He didn't know what else to do.
Yep.
Not saying that makes it right.
Right.
But that's just kind of like fear can take your body over.
Totally.
And make you do something that you do not want to do. And in both realms,
mm-hmm.
police and criminal,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it happens on both sides. Like you see a lot of these police shootings throughout the country and a lot of them could have been avoided, you know, because you either see the cops scared to put their hands on somebody
because
mm-hmm. they don't know how to defend themselves or handle themselves.
That's right.
And then it escalates too quickly to a firearm. Mm-hmm. And now someone's shot, you know, and a lot of times it may be a justified shooting, but I think with better training, it could have been avoided altogether,
yeah. Yeah.
you know, and I think that's where fear comes in. to play because it's a very controlling emotion. You know what I mean? Like, we've all felt fear at some point in our lives, and it's just how you deal with it.
When was that? Like, can you think of a time that you feel like fear got the better of you?
On the street. Yeah, I think, I physically, like, never, like, physically as far as, like, where I was too aggressive, I think, verbally. I think there's been times where the situation at hand, like, fighting over a gun, and like, maybe the gun was out, and, like, you're fighting for the gun, and it's a pretty intense situation, and you end up winning, but you're so mad because you know how close you were to losing your life.
Right.
And, like, you start to, like, God damn, you start to yell, get aggressive.
I think because that ain't you. I've seen you. That ain't you.
I think in moments like that, I've lost my cool verbally.
Right.
And it's very rare, like, for me to lose my cool verbally like that. So I think, reflecting on those moments, it was probably fear that, man, this was about the end of it. And it was only after I had my son.
Yeah.
Like, after I had my son, I became a lot more conscious of the things I did on the street as far as the risk I took.
Because you need to get home.
Yeah, and I mean, I had somebody I was responsible for now. Like, before that, man, I really just thought I was Mel Gibson, Lethal Weapon, man. Like, I just, that's how I wanted to be. Like, just, you know, doing the best job I could and being wild and having the adrenaline pump. Because that adrenaline is like a drug. Mm-hmm. You know, when you're chasing someone with a gun, or you're chasing a car, you're chasing a shooting suspect or a murder suspect, that adrenaline that is pumping through your body is like something you will never feel anywhere else.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's what you live for. And and before I had my son, I didn't really care like what I was doing. Like, I didn't care who I was going after or maybe how reckless I was being going after him. You know, once I had my son, I really kind of chilled out a little bit.
Is there any way you could count the amount of times that you've had to engage in like physical, like in a fight on the street, like that involved a gun? Like, it's more time, like.
Yeah, a lot. I mean, I've probably been involved in 1,000 handgun arrests in my career. And I mean, if we had to count the times we fought over them, I mean, maybe 200.
Right.
You know, I mean, right. I don't know. It's a lot more than I'd want. You know what I mean? Like, knock on wood, you know, you're, a lot of it's luck that a bad thing didn't happen, but a lot of it's training too.
Yep.
And training that I've taken on myself to make sure that, you know, I'm prepared while I'm out there.
Yep.
And that's an issue that a lot of cops don't train.
You've had fighting experience, you train jiu-jitsu, you train MMA. What percentage you think of cops out there have that level of training or like have taken upon themselves to?
3%.
Small.
5%. Yeah, small. I mean, a little.
Small.
You know, and some may do it for a short period of time. I mean, I found myself doing that, like, where I would train really hard, and then I would not train. Uh-huh. And then it would take a situation on the street where I was like, man, I could have went really bad.
Yeah.
I need to get back in the gym and focus. And
do you think that the training, like, being proficient with your hands, was something you and I have talked about a bunch. Like, do you think that that helps you tactically, or does it or psychologically, or both? And, like, how?
Both.
Both. And how, can you tell me how?
Yeah, I mean, if you're comfortable in a physical altercation, like, obviously you don't know who you're dealing with. And anytime you underestimate someone, you're going to lose, you know, you could possibly have already lost. So you have to be aware that, you know, the person you're dealing with might be better than you at everything you're good at. But if I think for your own peace of mind, if you're trained and you feel like you're pretty decent at certain things, and you can handle yourself. You know how to control the human body in certain situations. You know how to hold someone down. You know how to get someone's arms behind their back. You know, you have more confidence.
Yep.
And it's less likely that you'll escalate your force before it needs to be escalated.
Right, and then you're controlling your fear, and the way that you're communicating is from a place of sort of, I mean, there's something, I mean, we've all been in this situation, you know, anybody who trains where you just, somebody's got the better of you.
Yeah.
And then it's easy, you know, if you are under the umbrella of the safety of being in an academy or in, you know, you can box out, you can tap out, you can take a knee, whatever. But I think that actually, to a certain extent, I would imagine exists on the streets too. Like, if you can control a situation, you don't need to go to a place that you don't want to go.
Yeah, I mean, you see it when people, like, if I'm fighting a guy over a gun and, like, my guys are, like, trying to help and I got the gun in my hand, like, he's got the gun in his hand, I'm like, all right, guys, you know, trying to say, just grab him, hold his arm.
You're super calm.
Right. Someone that's not confident in their ability or confident that they know what they're doing is going to be screaming.
Yeah.
And you see it. Yeah. Oh, my God. And they're yelling, help, help. You know, and it's like, it escalates everyone.
Yeah.
It escalates all the cops. It escalates the citizens because it makes a situation, even though it's a really bad situation, but it makes it seem even worse because this person's screaming now, you know, they're yelling all this crazy stuff because they're hysterical because the fear is starting to take over their body. And now if that fear continues to take over and nothing is getting resolved, you're still fighting, whether it's for like 30 seconds, a minute, whatever, you begin to escalate your force.
Yeah.
You know, and that's when bad things start to really happen. Now, sometimes, you know, you have like a split second time to make a decision and you just have to live with it no matter which way you go.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of times you may regret the decision you made, but it may have been the right decision.
Yeah.
But you don't have a lot of time to decide it. But in situations where you have the time, you know, and the reason you're failing is because you haven't prepared.
Yeah.
You know, and like, look, no agency in this country that I know of gives their people the time to prepare. You know, they give you a little bit of training, a little bit of like remedial, and then you're on your way. You know what I mean? Like every year you get a little bit of training and you go about your business. And you can blame the departments all you want for that. But ultimately, you have to make the decision. If this is your career, this is your path, and you know you could lose your life any day you go to work, why wouldn't you take the time to train yourself, to find someone who can make you better?
Right.
You know, to find someone that can teach you things that will help you survive. So, like, when I hear people bitch that the department doesn't give them training, like these agencies, and I get it, and it should be allowed, you know, we should be allowed training time. But ultimately, if you're not taking the time for yourself to do it, you're just, you know, you're just bitching for no reason. You know, like, you could take time out of your day, mm-hmm. go spend an hour and train somewhere and learn something.
Yep.
You know, so. Yep.
And when and your initial decision to do this, like to make this your career, how'd you make that decision? Was there one thing that kind of spurred it on, and how did what effect did that have on your family?
I'm the only cop ever in my family that I know of. I don't think anyone ever thought I would be a cop growing up, just because this is not what we were, you know, what we did. And I mean, my family was really proud, you know, like. I made a decision to do something that was out of the norm. Not that my family's like a bunch of criminals, you know what I mean? But we just grew up in a neighborhood where there weren't cops, like, in our family, you know what I mean? Or even, like, that lived in our neighborhood. We just kind of, you know, we just wasn't there.
Yeah.
So I think they just, they love the fact that I'm a cop and they respect it and they know who I am as a person. And, like, my one brother, he works with a lot of guys that I've arrested.
Yeah.
You know, and I mean, they talk about me all the time. He always tells me, you know, hey, they ask how you're doing, whatever, and things like that. And, you know, so I don't know, like, what moment in my life I just think I'm going to be a cop. I think it was just kind of a build-up that I just thought, you know, I could maybe make a difference.
Yep.
You know, and, you know, the excitement of it, yep. You know, like, I thought that was pretty interesting, you know, so.
And of all the jobs that you've had as a police officer, what job do you feel like you've been able to have the biggest effect? Like, what job do you enjoy the most? What has been sort of like your favorite time as a police officer in your career?
I mean, doing what I do, I've pretty much done the same thing my whole career. You know, I mean, I came out on patrol like everyone. You ride around, you find your niche, what you're good at, or you know, or what you enjoy doing. And for me, it was like targeting people with like gun crimes, drug crimes, things like that, violent, you know, repeat violent offenders. Targeting people that were like persons of interest and like shootings and things like that. I've always kind of been in that area of police work. And for me, it's like I've locked up a lot of people in my career. And a lot of guys that I've arrested, you know, did prison time. They've come out and I've seen them on the street and we talk. I've had, you know, lunch with a bunch of them. Like I said, my brother works with a bunch of guys I put away. And one thing that there's a mutual respect. You know, and even after like doing time and, you know, and I put them there and they can still come up to me and talk to me and thank me and say, hey, man, like, you know, you were stand up. And, you know, for me, that takes more on their part than for me to be a cop and like take my time to talk to them because they went to prison.
Yep.
Like, yeah, they may have earned it. Like, yep. They may have did the crime. But as a person, as a, you know, they went to jail,
yeah.
Or they went to prison, whatever it may be, and they were gone, let's say a year, two, five, 10, whatever it is. And for them to be man enough or woman enough to come out and to be able to like swallow their pride and be like, thank you.
Yeah, but also, I mean, man, it says fucking volumes about you and how, and I've seen it. Like I've seen how you are in the street.
But for me, I really like, that means a lot to me.
Fuck yeah.
You know, regardless of what they did or I'm like, damn, like, you know, and I see a lot of cops don't like to engage like that. They don't like to engage with people because they take it personal. You know, they're like, oh, they're out here doing this, that, the other, and they take it personal. And I just think if they can learn to not take it so personal.
But do you think that, like, obviously, you know, you come from that area, you come from East Baltimore, you come from, I mean, do you think it's possible to truly sort of have that like kind of empathy and understanding if you've never experienced it, if you've never kind of been on that side of things?
Yeah, I mean, when you see new cops come from areas that aren't as impoverished as Baltimore and don't have that type of demographic, you definitely see a difference in the person. And I don't mean it like that they're a mean person or they have malice in their heart or anything. They're just not used to the environment.
Yeah.
You know, they don't understand how people are living, you know, and that, with that being said, it's not saying that everyone I come in contact with is a good person,
yeah.
You know, and they're doing, you know, some people are just evil,
mm-hmm.
You know, but you have to be able to recognize that,
mm-hmm.
You know, and you have to, it's just like when people are bashing the cops and cops are all taking it personal because they're bashing the cops,
yep.
You know, they're bashing the profession, you know, you can't take it personally, you know, yeah, it sucks because this is what you do, but they don't know you.
Do you think it's dangerous? Do you think bashing the cops is dangerous? Do you think it's such a dangerous
process? Yeah, I think it's definitely dangerous because it's the only profession that I know of where someone does something wrong. And let's say a cop commits a crime and takes someone's life, like murders them, right? It's the whole profession suffers from it. You know, and I get it's a heinous act and it needs to be dealt with. But there's no other profession that I know that's like that. Like you look at any other profession where there's corruption and it's dealt with in that part. Like if this is the corrupt group, that's who we deal with. It doesn't hinder the entire profession.
Right.
I mean, you look at anything in history, whether it's doctors, the Catholic Church, or sure. Whatever the case may be, it doesn't affect that profession or that realm like it does police. So, with that being said, I to a certain point, I understand it, you know, because the power that we have, you know, we have a lot of power.
Yep.
You know, we can take people's freedom. And, you know, if it comes down to it, we can take their life if we have to save others.
Uh-huh.
You know, so that's a lot of power that you have. But ultimately, you know, the majority of cops just want to do a good job. No cop wants to kill. Like, at least, look, let me say no. I'm sure there's some assholes out there that are not good for this profession. But most of us don't ever want to have to shoot anyone right. or kill anyone.
Right.
I mean, we really don't. Like, I don't want that on my conscience.
Right.
You know, like, even if I'm justified, even if I had to. You don't know how that's going to affect you. You know, you don't know how it's going to affect their family. You don't want to have to be in that situation.
Right.
And unfortunately, it happens, you know, but I just hope it never happens, you know, and it happens. Hopefully, it can stop happening in the volumes that it is.
Yeah.
But, you know, again, no one person has the answer.
Yeah.
And if I come to you and I'm like, this is how we fix it.
Yeah.
I'm just a fool.
Yeah.
No one person knows how to fix it.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I mean, they just don't.
Yeah. Explain just like a little bit about, just for people who don't know, like what is like plainclothes flex unit sort of like aggressive policing? Like how would you explain it?
So how it used to be, it's a little different now. Years ago, plainclothes units, like you basically just like this. I mean, you know, you had your badge around your neck, you had, you know, your vest on underneath your clothes. You know, you had your gun and your radio and that's pretty much what you did. And depending on what unit you were in, it could be target-based where, you know, you have a target and you need to go, like, investigate that target. It could be where you just ride around and try to, like, work the street in a street-level capacity where you're looking for things on view and trying to prevent crime and things like that. It just depends on what stage of that unit you're in. If you're targeting guys, you know, you're following them, you're doing, like, covert and watching them, you're writing search warrants, you're doing things like that, trying to put a case on them because, you know, if they're a violent repeat offender, you know, you want to target them so they don't keep committing crime, whether it be shootings, murders, you know, selling drugs, you know, heroin, coke, things like that, robbery, rape, whoever you're given as the target. You know what I mean? Normally, there's a reason you're given a target.
And would you say, I mean, like, I know, like, right now in this country, one of the big things that a lot of people, some people, we call them experts, whatever, would attribute sort of like the raising of, like, all the crime in big cities right now, the rates, especially violent crimes, because a lot of these sort of like plainclothes units are being kind of disbanded, or at least their sort of methodologies are being hindered in a certain way. Yeah. What do you think about that? Like, do you think that's right to a certain extent? Or
I think a misconception is that you can't be a good cop and an aggressive cop.
Yeah, can you tell?
I think that's a huge misconception. Right now, the big sell across this country is community policing. And they act like we haven't been doing it. You know, any good cop is part of that community. You know, whether you come up and you're playing catch with the kid or you're walking by a cookout and talking to the citizens, it's something we've all done our entire careers. But there's across the nation, it's being sold like this is a new error and we're doing community policing. And the misconception is you can't be an aggressive cop and still serve the community.
And be community minded.
Right. And, yeah. and it's sad because it's not true.
Well, I know it's not true because I've seen you. But I mean, like when you talk about the less trained, the more fearful, like, because it seems to me that, you know, if you're in one of those, you know, if you're in one of those units, it's like part of your job is, again, it's like, for lack of a better word, it's like you're going out looking for it. Like you're going out, like looking for those guys. And like that is how crime rates get lower. Like you're engaging, you're taking more criminals off the street. Mm. But also if you happen to be a weaker cop, a shittier cop, a more fearful cop, you're in a greater position. You're going out looking for it. So you're also like violating people. You're in a situation where you're violating people's rights more often and you're causing strife or potentially grief in that, you know, in that community because you're engaging people. And sometimes you're engaging people that don't need, you know, sometimes you're wrong.
Yeah. So there was a time where, you know, like the zero tolerance era of policing across the country where everyone's getting locked up for petty crimes.
Yeah.
And from my view, what happened there in Baltimore was you had a lot of cops that weren't arresting people before zero tolerance and then decided that, okay, we can lock people up now. And they made it easy for me because of these petty crimes. They didn't want to put the work in, you know, to maybe investigate a burglary from the street level, like a patrol person, or to like get in a covert and sit there for hours and watch a drug dealer and lock them up. So yeah, I definitely think that, you know, you had cops that were lazy and they probably made a ton of mistakes doing things they probably shouldn't have did. I'm sure that happened all over the country.
Yeah.
Cause you know, it was, even though I've never been told in my career, you need to go lock up X amount of people or you need to go write X amount of tickets. I've never been told that. But, you know, there was definitely like an idea that you had to lock people up, you know. But for me, that wasn't an issue because, like, I would go get in covert. I would go do things and make arrests. And, like, if you don't know what you're doing and, like, you're trying to make an arrest and you're not educated on, like, probable cause and, you know, you're not educated on how to make the arrest properly.
Yeah.
Yeah. You could be violating someone's rights. I mean, you could be making an unlawful arrest.
Yeah.
And I'm sure it's happened.
Yeah.
And I'm sure people, like, I get people feel a certain kind of way about that.
Yeah.
But that's a problem, you know, and it should be fixed. But again, it comes down to fear and not just fear of the criminal, but the fear of the repercussions that if you're not viewed as a worker, how you'd be treated in the department. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Now, like I said, I've never been told to go out and do X, Y, and Z, like as far as numbers. I've never seen that done. But it, like, you have a job. Like, you know, your job is to go out there and, you know, enforce laws. Mm-hmm. You know, stop crime if you can, prevent violence, prevent crimes, help the community. And so you have it, you know, you're basically given a set of keys and a radio, right, and you're going to go do your job.
Yeah.
Now, no matter if this person is a lazy cop, they're probably lazy in every aspect of their life. You know, just because they become a cop doesn't automatically make them a hard worker.
Yeah.
Or a good person, you know, or intelligent or any of those things. You know, so if this person was worthless before they got the badge, they're going to be worthless with the badge.
Yeah.
You know, I think a lot of that can be fixed in recruiting.
Yeah.
You know, recruiting, so many people slip through the cracks that shouldn't be cops.
Yeah.
And we see it. You know,
how would you fix that?
I don't know if I have the answers, but I mean, you could have better people in recruitment, have better personable people in recruitment that know how to interview someone.
Like you would know, like you can sit down, like, with somebody in 2 seconds and be like, all right, like I get what kind of guy.
Why would you want someone interviewing a potential candidate to become a cop if they've never done an interview in their career?
Or if they've never been on the street.
I mean, that seems crazy to me.
Yeah.
Like if I'm interviewing you, right, I'm doing all your interviews to become a cop, trying to gauge who you are.
Yeah.
And I've never done an interview in my career with someone who is deceptive,
yeah,
a criminal element, like, yeah, that's smart and is trying to deceive you.
Yeah.
And you're trying to figure out if they're bullshitting you, if they're being honest or what the case may be. You're trying to build that rapport and you build, you know, an expertise in interviewing someone and you look for things that stand out, like they're lying or they're being deceptive. And if you've never done that in your entire career, but now you're in recruitment and trying to bring cops in,
yeah,
and trying to weed out the bad ones,
yeah,
you have no skill in doing it.
Yeah.
So I feel like that's an area that could definitely be fixed everywhere.
Yeah.
Like in every department.
Yeah.
Recruitment could be, I feel like I've never been in recruitment, so I don't know how they're trained. I mean, I could speculate across the country how recruitment's trained, but I feel like you need, like, they should be definitely skilled in interview someone and try to, like, you know, recognize deception and things like that. Far from the lie detector. Like, yeah, you're given a lie detector test.
Yeah.
But other ways, you know what I mean?
Like, just talk to me a little bit about, like, just something I'm real interested in is just, like, kind of loyalty. No matter what side of the law you're on, there's a lot of that. And I think to a certain extent that it's absolutely necessary. Like, you got to be a certain guy. You have to be the kind of person who's there for someone else in a pinch. And I just was wondering, like, if you could talk about times where, like, someone's really gotten your fucking back and also when someone's, like, really let you down. And then also, have you seen any examples of, like, loyalty on the other side of the law where that you came away from really respecting?
Yeah, so for me, I mean, you know, like, when you're in those moments and you're, like, getting heated and you're fighting with a guy or the situation's out of control, you know, and when it becomes to kind of calm, like, starts to calm down and you're still in, at that level where you're, like I said, like, the one time when I was yelling and a couple of times I lost my cool and screaming and someone, like, that worked for me, like, you know, here is an officer and I'm a supervisor, comes over and grabs you and, like, Sarge, stop. You know, this is an officer. A lot of officers may be scared to do that, you know, because this is a person of rank. And, like, I really don't want to get involved, you know, because I don't want this guy to look at me a certain kind of way. But when you have that relationship with people, you know, and they see you're acting out of character, you know, and you're about to do something you might regret that you shouldn't do, and they step in and grab you and calm you down, to me it shows how loyal they are because they're willing to risk maybe how I'll react to them.
Like, in that moment.
Right, like, to help me, you know, and vice versa. Like, when you see someone maybe about to step over that line, like, if they're getting in a fight with a guy and you're pulling up on it and it looks like it's getting carried away, you know, and you run over and pull them off of them and grab them and, like, calm it down, you know, it shows a lot. Like, you're looking out for both, the interest of both. You don't want more force to be used than what should be used.
Right.
And you don't want the cop to make a mistake because he could just be in the heat of the moment.
So, I mean, you look at the George Floyd situation, you see those cops sort of, like, standing there where that was going down. Like, I mean, so, like, what's your I mean, even though that guy had rank, he had years, they were new. I mean, what, like, how do you explain
that situation? There's no need to nail on someone like that for 12 minutes, 13 minutes, whatever it was. Like, it's, look, I don't know what that dude's intentions were. Like, but regardless of what it was going through his mind, there was just no need for you stand up and that's it, roll him over and it's done.
Mm.
Like, it was just, maybe he was trying to be a dick and he had cost a man his life and he's going to go to prison for it.
But those, maybe but those other guys,
they were scared. But that's fear.
Yeah.
That's fear of, like, I'm going to step in on a senior officer and maybe that guy's probably a dick and, you know, like, yelled at all young officers and made them feel like shit or whatever. And
they probably, fear's the same shit. If you act like that there, you act
exactly.
Like
that. So they were probably scared to step in. Because they didn't know what to do.
Yeah.
They're probably, look, if you're not a confident person in anything you do, like I said, it's going to turn out bad in those situations because you're not going to intervene when you should.
Yeah.
You know, and who knows what would happen if they pull them off. Maybe that never happens and we're not in that situation.
Uh-huh.
You know, but like I said, that dude probably was that type of cop and they were scared to say anything to him. And ultimately, it cost that man his life, and he's going to go to prison for it.
And what about the other side of loyalty? What about the side where you were actually were in danger and somebody was there for you?
No, I mean, that means the world. You can't – look, someone's in them fights with you. You're chasing a guy with a gun, you know, and there's – you know, you pull up on a shootout or a discharge, and you're chasing dudes that just fire guns off and trying to kill people, and you got somebody right next to you running with you. That says a lot. I mean, you can't – you know, it's – I've never been in the military in war or anything, but I'm sure it's similar to a lower scale on our side of how that makes you feel. You know what I mean? That they're willing to risk their life side by side with you, not let you run in that alley by yourself.
There's a bond there that...
You'll never break that bond. Yeah. I mean, it doesn't mean that they can't do any wrong. It just means that you're really going to try to look out for them the best you can and make sure they're on the right track and vice versa. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But... yeah, I mean, you build bonds in this job. The camaraderie is big. I didn't come in here looking for a reputation. You know what I mean? I didn't come in here thinking I want to be viewed like this type of cop or person. I came in here just to do a good job. And, you know, I kind of policed the way I thought you should police. You know, I treated people the way they thought and I thought they should be treated. And I think over the years on the street and in the department with the lower rank, you know, I've built a certain reputation. And not that I've looked to do it, it's just kind of where it fell. You know, and I think if you treat people right, whether they work for you, they work around you, or you're policing them, they'll treat you right. Now, look, there's exceptions to every rule. you know, and you're going to have those douchebags and assholes in the department and on the street, then no matter how well you treat them, they just don't care.
Right.
You know, but overall, you can't gauge how you treat people by the few that don't, you know, the few that don't respect it.
Yeah.
You know, so.
Yeah. And right now, like, what's the, in your opinion, what's the state of policing in Baltimore? Like, what is, you know, like, what is, what do you, where do you think we're at?
I don't think, I don't think a lot of cops are bought into it anymore. You know, it's, like, I love the job. And when I'm on the street, I'll do the job the best I can. And, you know, like I said, because the adrenaline's going and, you know, you're there. The problem is a lot of cops, it's hard when you feel like no one has your back and you're going out there and risking your life to do certain things. You might not go that extra mile. You know, you might not look as hard as you should for something going wrong in the neighborhood. You know what I mean? And I'm sure a lot of that's going
on. How do you feel like no one has your back right now specifically?
It's hard, man. It's hard to explain because you just feel like you're out there on your own, and if something pops off, you're going to be guilty until you're proven innocent,
right,
or until you're cleared, and no one's going to speak out for you and be like, look, they had to do what they had to do. We'll investigate it, you know, but let the facts come out until we judge them. You know, and if it's wrong, it's wrong. If it's right, it's right. But you kind of feel like you're out on an island right now, you know, and you're just not, like, they keep changing legislation and, like, taking away, like, rights as far as, like, when we get charged with crimes and things like that. And look, man, I'll be the first to tell you, if a cop is doing something like that, they get what they deserve. If they're selling drugs and, you know, stealing money and planting evidence and all that shit, whatever comes their way is what they deserve.
Yeah.
You know, but the issue is it's affecting everyone. And I get it. You know, I understand why it's on everyone's mind, because there's been a lot of egregious incidents over the last few years, you know, especially with, like, the George Floyd incident. And, you know, but there has to be a medium position.
Yeah.
It can't be all or nothing.
Yeah.
You know what
yeah.
I mean? Like, yeah, you want to weed out the bad cops, but the perception is that the bad cops are doing everything around the good cops.
Uh-huh.
And that's just not true.
Yeah.
You know, if you have friends that are involved in illegal shit that they know you ain't down with, they ain't gonna do it around you.
Right. Yeah. You said there's, like, there's absolute evil out there. You feel like you've encountered evil.
Oh yeah. I've seen evil, man.
And like, can you give me an example in your words, like, what evil is?
Yeah. Like, you know, when I've seen it more in patrol when I first came out, because, like, being in my field, you're only going after a certain group of individuals that are involved in, like, guns and drugs and things like that. But in patrol, man, your call could be anything. You know, you go to, like in my district, you had Johns Hopkins. So, you know, you respond to the hospital, whether it's for, like, a child abuse or rape, things like that. You know, and for me, it's kids, man. Like, you see a kid, you know, beat to a pulp, you know, or killed. You see a kid shot, you know, or a kid beat to death, or boiling water thrown on a kid, something like that, man. Yeah. Like, that's just pure evil, man. Like, you know, the gun violence, when it's, like, two groups battling, it sucks, lives are being lost. But it's kind of like both groups know what they're getting into, and they're battling it out, and not saying it's right. But there's an understanding there in that element of what they're into.
You signed up for it.
But a kid, man, like, you know, or an innocent, like, an elderly person or a woman being raped or brutalized, they didn't sign up for that shit. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? And, like, you go and bearing that kid, you know, is beat to shit, and, you know, you can't even see their eyes because they're so swollen or they're all cut up or they're burned.
Yeah.
You know, that's, for me, when I was, like, a new cop, that was one thing where I knew I just didn't want to, like, be involved in.
Yeah.
Because, like, I didn't know how I would deal with that situation.
Yeah.
You know, and, like, I was scared of how I would react.
Yeah.
Like, if I walked into that, if I continuously had, like, type of call and I'd walk in and, like, a guy, like, a father or mother beat their kid like that or killed their kid, I'm not sure how I would react. You know what I mean? Like, and I knew that.
Yeah.
So I kind of, like, I knew that wasn't my, you know, area that I wanted to focus on.
Right.
Like, child abuse or sex crimes, because, like, I just didn't know how I could handle it.
The anti-police charge, like, where do you think, I mean, obviously, look, man, there's all this shit in the news and all this, you know, there's issues of corruptions and these unjustified shootings and shit like that. But, like, this idea of kind of, like, police reform and defunding the police and all that, like, where do you think that stuff is coming from?
I mean, I know we talked about this before, but, like, I just think this is, like I told you before, like, this is our 60s and 70s. you know, this is our era for that. You know what I mean? Like, we're living through the 60s and 70s right now, when there were riots and there was, like, you know, the Vietnam, you know, protest,
anti-war, yeah.
Screw the police type, you know, idea was going on. That's what we're living through now. Look, I think that there was an idea that there needs to be some reform in certain styles of policing, and I get. And I think it just snowballed into something that it wasn't meant to be.
And do you think that there needs to be reform in certain styles of policing?
I think there needs to be reform in training and recruitment. I think recruitment is a big thing. Look, man, you're always going to have corrupt police because there's a human element. And in any profession, there's always going to be bad people.
Yeah.
And police work is no different.
Yeah.
There's going to be people to get through the cracks.
Yeah.
And they're going to do bad shit. It's going to happen. It is never not going to happen.
Yeah. And you love Baltimore?
I do. I grew up here and it's going, look, this is a great city, man. It's just going through a hard time. And there's great parts of this city. You know, it's a little gem, you know what I mean? And but it has a bad rap right now. And I mean, rightfully so. I mean, it's violent as hell right now. And, you know, I mean, violence in the country, it goes in laws, you know what I mean? But, you know, it's really bad right now. You know what I mean? I don't really know what the fix is. You know, I think police work has become too soft, you know, overall. Cops aren't as aggressive because they're scared to get in trouble. They're scared that, you know, we feel like we're dinosaurs. You know, we feel like agencies in this country don't want cops like me anymore. They don't want that aggressive cop. You know, like I said, it's a misconception that you can't be a good cop and an aggressive cop.
Yeah.
And I think that idea needs to change, or this is just going to continue.
Yeah.
You know, like I said, I don't have the single answer, but I think, you know, recruiting better, allowing police to be police is probably a good idea. You know, obviously hold them, you know, accountable. But look, we have body cameras now. I've been working with a body camera for years, still being the same cop I was 15 years ago. And I'm fine. I love my body camera.
Yeah.
No issues with it at all. It saved
Why do you love it?
Because it shows, like, it shows what you really do. It shows, like, when people say things you do and you really don't do them, and that camera clears you like that.
To what extent do you think that there is, like, real currency of having a reputation as a police officer, as somebody who, if you want to go there, he will go there or she will go there? And also on the other side, like, I've also seen, you know guys on the streets, guys who are kind of career criminals, and, like, you guys have a mutual respect for each other. And how much of that is that currency of violence?
It's huge. I mean, it plays a big part. And right now, the turnover rate is so high in most departments that it's hard to build that type of rapport and reputation with people, which is another big thing. Like, you got to learn how to retain police, or else you can't have community policing if no one ever builds a rapport with people in the community.
Right.
And the door is revolving so fast now that there's not enough time for a lot of these officers to build rapports.
Right.
So, like, in me coming up, like, yeah, cops have reputations. Like, you know, even when you just pull onto the street and they see you,
everybody knows your
lifestyle
name.
Lifestyle changes, right? Yeah. Like, you know, they're like, oh, shit, he's out. Be careful. Don't be stupid.
Yeah.
You know, you have nicknames. They give you nicknames or whatever. And you build a rapport. And look, if you're a shit cop, they're going to know it. They're going to call you out. Everyone's going to know it because word's going to get out.
Yeah.
If you're good at your job, if you're, like, respectful, if you, you know, police right, that word gets out too, and people respect you and vice versa.
Yeah.
And again, it just comes down to having a mutual respect.
Yeah.
You know, understanding that it's not personal.
Yeah.
You know, they're not out there doing this to spite Anthony Maggio.
Right.
You know, they're out there selling drugs or doing whatever they're doing because that's just what they chose to do.
Yeah.
It has nothing to do with it.
Yeah.
The
yeah.
minute you make it personal, you've lost.
Yeah.
You know, and you're going to lose yourself in that moment.
Yeah.
So I just think if you're out there and, like, if it gets aggressive and you have to fight and they see you can handle yourself, there's a lot less chance that someone will try you.
That's it.
Huge. Like, if you get out there and a dude works you up and he takes all, like, he throws you down and runs away from you, every person you try to lock up is going to throw you down and try to run away from you.
That's right.
Because they know they can do it.
Uh-huh.
But if they try that and you dump them or slam them or, you know, if they throw a punch and you know, your punch is faster, whatever the case may be, and they realize he ain't one to mess with, they just don't do it.
Yeah.
You know, and look, you'll have the ones that will test you, and there's always a exception to them rules, but yeah, reputation is huge on both sides.
Yep.
You know, like, you know that there's some guys that you just can't calm down.
Right.
like, if so-and-so comes up and starts running his mouth, the best thing to do is ignore him, because no matter what you say to him, you're never going to calm that dude down.
Right.
Because he's just being an ass. Right.
But that is community. But that is like having an intimate, not like understanding who's who and who does what. And like, but hey, look.
That's why this whole thing with like trying to sell the community policing model all across the country, you need retention to sell that model. Because if you're not retaining cops, and if these cops aren't in these neighborhoods longer than 6 months a year, they're not building rapport with the community.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? They're chasing call to call.
Mm-hmm.
Where do they have time to build a rapport? And then they quit, or go to another agency, go to another line of work. Then you have a whole new set of cops that come in and try to do it.
Yeah.
So you're never building that rapport.
Yeah.
Where, like, I've worked in that same neighborhood pretty much most of my career.
Yeah.
You know, and I've been dealing with a lot of these guys since they were kids.
Yeah. And you grew up there.
Right. And like, the first guy I locked up, I grew up with.
Wow.
You know, like D, when I met D, we had a mutual friend that we knew growing up, you know, and it's like that dude poured a gun on me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, so it's like, yeah, that helps.
Yeah.
But even when I went to like the West Side for a little bit, it's the same thing.
Yeah.
If you just treat people a certain kind of way, it will repay itself.
Yeah.
You know, and not that you're looking for repayment, but it's just karma.
Yeah.
You know, it's just you treat people right. Like I told you a story when I got my car stuck in the mud when I was a young cop.
No.
So there was this dude. He was a big time drug dealer. Uh-huh. And I was young, been patrol, had like 6 months on. You know, I was hard charging, whatever. And I used to always like try to get this guy. And I was brand new. I had no idea what the hell I was doing. Always making mistakes, you know, trying to get in a coat, like a vacant house and watching, making too much noise.
Yeah.
You know, whatever the case may be. Just always screwing it up.
Yeah.
And one day I'm like, I'm going to get this dude, right? I'm going to get his ass today.
Yeah.
Came out early in my car and I went through the alley and I was trying to park my car like two alleys down to sneak up on him. And I got stuck in the mud and I'm back, my wheels are spinning, you know, I'm revving the engine. I can't get out, man. And this was a big dude. I'm not going to put his name out there because I know I don't want to throw him out there like that. But he was a big guy, about 6'6", 350.
Damn.
And his buddies and brothers were the same size.
Yeah.
And so as I'm back here trying to get my car out of this mud and the wheels are spinning, you know, I'm like, ah, man, this sucks. Him and his two buddies come walking into the alley. And they're huge. I mean, he's a big-ass dude.
Yeah.
And I'm like, damn. So I get out of my car. I'm like, what's up, man? He's like, what are you doing? I was like, I got my car stuck. And he was like, you was trying to watch me, weren't you? And I was like, yeah, I was trying, but I fucked that up. You know what I mean? He's like, ah, man, we got you. And they pushed me. Those three big-ass dudes pushed me out of mud.
Wow.
And you know, like at the moment, you really don't realize what it is. But as you get older, because I mean, I was 21, young, you know, you just realize what that meant.
Fuck yeah.
Here I am trying to put these dudes in jail. And they realize I don't know what the hell I'm doing because I'm brand new. And, you know, they went over there and pushed me out.
Mm.
You know, and that just, it shows a mutual respect.
That's it.
You know, and even like I got in a fight one time locking a dude up on Miami Street. And then my gun flew out of my holster. I mean, it flew out of it. Like, me and this guy are going at it. And as we're fighting, like, he somehow hit my gun and it flew out of the holster and slid down the street. And this dude, and I'm not going to say his name, he walks over and stands over top of my gun and won't let no one touch it until I got the dude in handcuffs. I walked over. He's like, here you go, man. And I was like, thanks. You know, and you those moments. Here's a guy that's been to prison. You know, I put him in prison before and,
wow.
You know, stood there and like.
So why did he do that?
Just because he said I always treated him right. You know, like guys that work with my brother, they just always say, no, I'm a stand-up dude. And again, I don't think it should be a mindset where you go out there and you're like, I need to be a stand-up dude. You know what I mean? Like, you shouldn't have to think about it. You know, you have these classes where they're telling you how to talk to people. Like, you shouldn't have to. Like, you failed already.
Yeah. You're either that way.
Right. Like, you've either been brought up that way, you have that mindset, or you don't.
Mm-hmm.
I don't go out there and, like, consciously say, okay, I need to be a good person today. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I need to not violate someone's rights today. Like, you just shouldn't be thinking like that. It should just be naturally you go out there to do the right thing.
Right.
You know, and that's why, like, I think it just falls back to recruiting the right people. You're doing a better recruitment process of getting the right people in here.
Yeah. But I think honor is exactly like what you were talking about as well, being open-minded, being able to like sit down with somebody who thinks differently than you and being confident enough in your opinion that you're not going to be shook if you meet somebody from a different area or different sexual orientation, different religion, different, like whatever, man. And you know, like right now it's like having the loudest voice, being like, it's my way or the fucking highway. And I, personally, I think that's pretty soft. You know, rigidity and being unwilling to deal with anybody different. Just, you know, it reeks of fear to me. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I mean, it's a mechanism where people aren't confident that they want to be their only voice heard, you know, and that's their defense to not being secure in who they are, I think. Like my son asked me, because like he always asked me stories about being police, and like he asked me how I changed, you know, like when, because I told him when I had him, I stopped being as crazy, like, you know, as aggressive and reckless as I was. And, you know, I thought about it for a long time because I really didn't know how to answer it, you know, and for me, change has always been a scary word. You know, I think for a lot of people it is.
Fuck it.
Like, even like in police work right now, like a lot of cops are like, you're trying to change the way I police. And kind of like, I don't think it's ever changed, man. Like, I don't think society, anyone allows anyone to truly change. We all adjust. Like, when I retire, no matter what I go to do, I'm going to be the former cop. I can't ever change that. I can adjust my lifestyle, adjust who I am. I can adjust my rent. If I was addicted to something and now no longer am I addicted to it. And I kind of got this perspective, like talking to guys that got off drugs and, you know, they're like, man, I'm always going to be an addict. I just got to live today for today. And, you know, like they take it day to day.
Yeah.
And they never change who they are. Like, it's not a change. They're just adjusting their life. Yeah. And I think if we can start kind of stop like saying we're going to change you. Yeah. We're going to change the way you do this and we're going to adjust it.
Yeah.
People will receive it a lot more.
Yeah.
Like if you try to change someone, they take that immediately as, what the fuck are you trying to change me for?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. You're trying to change me?
Yeah.
Or you're trying to change the way I do this?
Tell me I'm doing something wrong.
But if I go to you and like, hey man, let's adjust the way we're doing some things.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. I think in your mind.
Get better, man.
Right.
Get
your
better,
mind.
That's it.
Interprets that a little differently.
Yeah.
Where it's not an aggressive thing.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, I can adjust my lifestyle.
Yeah.
Like in every aspect of life, I just don't think change is what really happens.
Yeah.
I think it's just adjustments.
Yeah.
Because we are who we are.
Yeah.
Like we can say we're not going to be aggressive dudes, but if that situation arises and we have to, we're going to be that dude.
Yeah.
You know, we're going to have to adjust back to who that person is.
Yeah.
In police work, because like you said, there's a big revolving thing going on right now of changing the way police is. I think if we go about it and say, hey, we're going to adjust the way we do things, it would be received a lot more in agencies across the country. And not so much frowned upon, like, oh, they're trying to change the way we do our job. It's not working.
Yeah.
You know, but we need to adjust the way we're doing our job because we can do better.
We can do better. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And I think in every aspect of life, you can use that.
Admitting your mistakes and acknowledging mistakes and working on your mistakes, it's like growing and like being a part of something that you're just trying to get better and better. And when I think about like the state of policing in this country and like where it is, it's that like the few guys that I've met a fucking shit ton of cops, but I look at these like choice few that I like look at that way. Every single one is sort of saying the same thing. They're like, I love the guys. Like I know how I want to police. I love what I do. I love the community I police. I love being there, but I don't know how much longer I can do it. And that's worrisome to me, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's tough when, like, you got to weigh, like, risk and reward, man. Like, no one takes his job for money. No one takes his job for a pat on the back. At least they shouldn't. I'm sure there probably are maybe some people that just need a job and they got through the process. But, yeah, I mean, you take it for, because you truly want to help people, you know? And when you feel like you can't do that anymore, not because you don't want to, but just because you're being hindered, you know, because you don't have the tools or you don't, you know, you're kind of being reined in. It's tough. It's tough to go out there and like risk it all knowing what you have to lose and, you know, not knowing if, you know, anyone's going to ever like stick up for you.
Yeah.
I think it'll turn, you know, like it's just going to take some time, you know, like there's no one person that is going to turn it. You know, I think we can all be in agreement. We don't need bad cops.
Right.
You know, but again, if you're a realist and you're open-minded, you realize they're always going to be there.
Yeah.
You know, it's just nothing you can do about it. You have to be humble. And you're never going to get better if you're always the best guy in the room.
That's right.
And if you have that mindset, if you feel you're the best and you're not open to getting better, you're never going to get better.
That's right.
And you're nowhere near as good as you think you are.
That's right.
In anything. Yeah. In any field you're in. I mean, I just think you always have room to grow, you know, and I just, that's, just kind of the mindset I've always had, you know. Yeah. I can always get better.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So, whether I achieve it or not, I don't know.
Yeah, hey, man. Well, that's the deal. Man, I really appreciate this, man.
I loved it.
Fucking,
it was great.
Yeah, it's fucking great.
Thank you, bro.
Thank you, bro.
Thanks for being here, everybody. I really appreciate it. If you dug what you saw and you want to hear more, subscribe, like, do all that stuff. It'd mean a lot to us. I hope you dig these episodes as much as we dig doing them. You guys take care of yourself.